Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
We at Pack Your Knives love to draft, so much so that we decided to draft Top Chef contestants live on the podcast. Drafting is the best, and if you're into fantasy sports, I got a stat for you. Did you know that your chances of winning on draft are 80% better than on salary cap sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros. And it's not just me. More than 1 million people that have already downloaded Draft 2. Play in a real live NBA draft right now and be done in under 5 minutes. Get paid out the very next day. Drafts are filling every second, so you can join one whenever you want. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make your first deposit. But make sure to use my promo code HEALTHY. H-E-A-L-T-H-Y. HEALTHY. That's right, play in a real money draft for free just by using my promo code HEALTHY. But it gets even better. Draft is so sure you'll love it that they're even offering Pack Your Knives listeners a money-back guarantee of up to $100. Just search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and play free right now with promo code HEALTHY.
This is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
And I'm Tom Haberstroh.
Tom, I think I am safe to say this is the most wide open Top Chef season in terms of competitiveness in recent history. There is no favorite. Four of the five Elimination Challenge winners finished in the bottom three the previous week. I don't know what your analytics are showing, but I don't know who the hell is going to win this thing.
There is no one who has separated themselves from the field. In my analytics here, just in terms of the fantasy point system that we have, by the way, the 20 points. If you win the Top Chef Elimination Challenge, you get 10 points. If you are in the top three, in the bottom three, you get -3. And then if you're eliminated, you get -5. And then we have, you know, a couple points here and there for the quickfire, but there is no clear favorite. The high point person in this, and this isn't spoiler alert, we'll get into, you know, how people did this week, but the most points right now so far of any Top Chef contestant on this season is Christopher and Carrie have 32 points, Joe Stash has 30,
Then you have Tanya at 29, Bruce at 23, and Fatima at 22.
Right. There are Fatima, sixth place, has three high finishes, no low finishes in terms of the final elimination. She's clearly this is like as if everybody at the break in an NBA season were like 29 and 12. There were like 17.
It's amazing. You know, you think someone is going to, you know, clear from the pack and just plow ahead, whether it was Christopher or Joe Stash, and you thought Bruce was in the rut early on. He's coming on very strong, but you know, there really isn't any sort of consistency here, and it makes for a really fun show.
I think so too. We had a major development. Leanne had to drop out. Altitude will fuck you up, and she is pregnant, and she had to depart the show. So she was not eliminated, but was no longer be on the grid.
And in the NBA, Kevin, we know this, that Denver, high altitude, does have an effect on your play, at least a point or two, in terms of, on average, the Denver Nuggets will run teams out of their gym. Because of the high altitude, other teams just can't compete. And you had George Karl, that goes a long history that you can talk about, of teams from Denver play at a really fast pace because they know that that is a performance-enhancing drug for them.
And
that
water boils faster. I'm curious to ask our guest today, Claudette Zepeda-Wilkins, if the cooking in the kitchen is modified because of the altitude.
Oh, so like quick-fire challenges are a little easier? Is that right?
I don't know. We're going to find out. But really interesting week. I mean, all right, so let me – it's not a vent, but let me offer something. I'm looking forward to this phase of the season of Top Chef ending. And in this respect, the quick fire challenge was they take one of your signature high level of difficulty dishes that takes a long time and prepare it for 30 minutes for a home chef. We're going to post that you would post on BuzzFeed or Facebook. And this is coming off the heels of an episode where, make a kid dish, work in a larger context. And I don't enjoy seeing chefs dumb down their dishes for children or Facebook or BuzzFeed. I like to see them elevate them. Like, I don't want to suggest that adaptability is not a talent a chef should have, but I'm kind of ready to see chefs max out. I'm tired of, cook in the wilderness, cook for kids, cook for home chefs. Like, I feel like I'm ready for the competition to let these chefs just take their training wheels off or take the constraints that are weighing them down and just kind of fly.
Yeah, because isn't the whole point of going to a Bruce Coleman restaurant or Eat Food by Fatima is that you know that this is going to be a very time and labor intensive. It's going to take 6 hours or 2 days to prepare that dish, and that's why you go to these restaurants, is because you can't do that at home.
Yeah.
You know? And so there is that, I'm with you, is that some of those dishes, I'm like, man, like when I looked at Fatih's dish, I'm like, I don't want to eat that. Not because it was a poorly prepared dish, but because that's not something I care about, is whether it's going to be prepared in 30 minutes at home.
Exactly.
You know?
Like, I want to see her do a biryani her way. And that actually produced one of my more like sad moments of the season, where there was like an Indo-Pakistani conflict where,
I feel like a deflated balloon right now.
Yeah. I mean, for our listeners, you might remember in the quick fire, she did her biryani and Padma did not find it sufficiently flavorful and said, hey, you cook essentially European food really well. Like, why can't you cook our food well? And Fatima was just absolutely. I felt the pain there. That was rough. But
that's like your mom saying, "I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed."
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. Let's start with the headliner. It was an elevated German challenge for which was the elimination challenge. Elevated German food, high German, as we would say, and the challenge was, in addition to that, pair it with a Radler. Tom, you're more of a beer guy than I am. Do you know what a Radler is? This was new.
I didn't. Okay, this is a blind spot for me. So if it was a blind spot for me as someone who loves an IPA or a stout or a Goza, like, this must have been, and this I had a problem with, Kevin. I had a problem with them being a cocktail artist there. I did not expect them to know what beers work with fruits. Like, I just didn't, I mean, maybe this is something that should be in their repertoire, but it's almost like, hey, basketball player, go play soccer because it's a similar sport. Well, no, there's a ball and there's teammates and we go for a goal, but it's a different ball game.
Yeah. So obviously, we had the winner surprises many. She was as surprised as anyone was Tanya, who did a gorgeous job with her final dish, the pork and apple croquette with the lovely pumpernickel crust, which is going to get the German in there. Bruce is really coming into his own. I think that's going to be an interesting development to watch. Like, I think he's finding his game. He goes with the pork belly and the goat cheese spetzel, so he gets to show off his pasta with the spetzel.
Did you catch him earlier? I think he fixed it, but he called it like a spatzle.
What the hell do I know? I mean, my Teutonic linguistic skills are pretty limited. So,
but I want to say that Bruce was smart. Is that I think he had the switch a couple episodes ago where he said, "I am going to cook my food. I am not going to try to be someone else. I am not going to try to do something that I'm not comfortable doing." He's cooking his food right now. So when he did the Italian version of a German dish, I thought that was very smart by Bruce, and it's paying big dividends.
And I thought that was the general theme of both the successes and the failures. So we lost Brother Luck this week. I lost Brother Luck from my team. He decided, hey, what if I do a Chinese egg roll but fill it with German things, essentially, right? So I can maintain the integrity of the contest, and at the same time, I can kind of cook the kind of food I want. It turned out, and God, Brother Luck, we got to get Brother Luck on the show to talk about his life story. I am fascinated that his hippie Creole dad and hippie mom that essentially lived most of their lives in Asia as what, like doing floor shows.
I think. And it was exotic dancers. Both of his parents were exotic dancers, and they named their son Brother.
And Brother Luck. But basically, Asia is kind of where they spent much of their time. So he's kind of rooted in Asian cuisine, and he lost, and it was a gamble, and he kind of passed it off as, look, I gotta maintain my integrity. And I think if you want to maintain your personal expression as a chef and a challenge that kind of just annoys you, like, oh, German food, I think you got to do what Tanya did. Right. She made the spice mixture her own. So inside that croquette and with the pumpernickel crust, she had, you know, essentially Creole and Tanya-ish flavors, or Claudette, who did brilliantly on this. Right. Like she does taste of, you know, Jalisco. And so she does a cilantro, lemon, liverwurst, the beef schnitzel and potato salad. So essentially German items with a slightly you know, her native flavor, but you don't have to, you don't fundamentally change the formal structure of the dish or the challenge. Like, if you want to do what he did, don't go with the bok choy too. Like, go with, okay, I'm going to do an egg roll, but it's going to have Landjager and bacon apple sauerkraut. Like, you really got to German that shit up if you're actually going to put it in an egg roll. Because what's heartbreaking for him is, as Padma said, Tom, like, it was a tasty dish. Like, there were three people up for elimination, and they kind of fucked it three different ways. Like, one fucked the challenge. Joe, Mustache Joe, surprised to see on the bottom, he fucked up the protein. And then you had Adrian, who fucked up the seasoning. So it's kind of the three great ways to fuck up an elimination challenge, each represented as Tom Colicchio said. But I just feel like you can do that I'm gonna cook my food thing and still not betray the structure of the challenge. And I think Brother just went over. He just did. But
yeah. And that's frustrating to me because, you know, Bruce he kind of did the same thing, which is, I'm going to do an Italian dish, but make it kind of German. And the concept of doing that has been successful on the show, right? Some of the favorite dishes on this show is when you think, okay, I'm going to juxtapose this thing that I'm really good at and mix it with the theme of this elimination challenge, right? But I felt bad for Brother. I think the idea of him, there's something about Asian food that might not be translatable to others. I don't know what that is. But when they said like egg roll, I'm like, what's wrong with having an egg roll with full of like German food in there?
The bok choy though is not very German. Now you're going with a Chinese envelope with essentially an Asian vegetable. And I think yes. had he gone again, like had he done some really, oh, Landjager with, you know, the back, bacon apple sauerkraut or some cabbagey thing that is very German in flavor rather than Asian in flavor. By the way, one of the things that's kind of sad to me with Leanne's departure and brother, though he's not Asian, does a lot of Asian cooking is I don't think there are any Asian chefs left on the show. And when I look at those plates at the Elimination Challenge, I'm somebody who just loves Asian food, and I'm a little sad about that. I don't know that we've had a recent season of Top Chef where this early in the season, really midway, not even midway, we no longer have an Asian chef in the field or a chef who works primarily with Asian palate. And that's sad to me.
Yeah. I mean, brother could make his way back.
This is true.
He could make his way back, and you have four chefs that are still quote unquote alive on your team. I guess we can get into it later, but two, did you watch Last Chance Kitchen?
I feel like, wait, that's the Last Chance Kitchen that includes brother, right?
Yes.
All right. So I don't want to, like, to me, that's, do we do that on this show? Cause I haven't watched it. I feel like you do it for, like, he got eliminated. So that's next week's.
Yeah. We can talk about next week. We can talk about it. Cause it is drama. It is high controversy.
Okay.
This is a very big moment in the show. And I think there have been times in history that this has happened before.
I felt like that was next. Okay. Well,
it can be. It could absolutely. We can hold it for next week. I just didn't know if we were going there. But speaking of immunity and Last Chance Kitchen, all that fun little sidebars to the show, I want to talk about Chris for a second here.
Yes.
Chris Scott, who was on the show last week, an amazing interview. We didn't touch on this part of his life that he is a recovering alcoholic, but I found it interesting in this episode they decided to pair the meal, the German meal, with, it was kind of extraneous. Like, I don't think anyone was saying, this is German food, so we gotta have the chefs concoct their own beer, their own Radler. But it really threw him off his game as being triggered by the whole going to the bar and having to drink and taste these different the beverages. And I think he was doing non-alcoholic ones. Am I right? Did you catch that?
I believe so.
Right. And then he was in a funk, as he said, the rest of the time. But he kind of validated himself in this moment. Keegan, the guest judge, came to, you know, his table at the Elimination Challenge, and his dish wasn't all that great. But Chris had immunity, right? And so the guy, Keegan, just looks at his sausage slider and he eats it and he just says it was very dry. And Chris says back to him, "Fair enough." And then he smiles. That smile right there was, I got immunity, bitch. Mm-hmm. I don't really care. I am good. Like, you know what? You can take all your criticism for me on this episode. I'm good because I earned that immunity and I'm good. So there was this moment, just slide, like, yeah, fair enough, chef.
Do you think, Tom, that his buying pre-made sausages and pretzel rolls was a fuck you for the alcohol pairing?
Wow. Now that is a conspiracy theory.
Like, you're going to put me in this position where you're really going to, you know, hey, we know we're chefs, right? We know we've signed up for this competition. We're going to be forced to camp in 35 degree weather in feet of snow. We're going to have to cook in little children things. I mean, basically you're hazed for several weeks, right? But screw with something that is much bigger in my life. Don't screw with something that can really throw. I mean, I'm not going to have, you know, I don't need to suffer trauma on something like this that I've worked so hard. And so he does what I call it the immunity brain fart. It's like you kind of know your survival instincts are a little less sharp because you know you're fine. So you actually like go buy pre-made sausage and pre-made pretzel rolls. Like it is. I kind of took that as, yeah, he really was having, from an honest standpoint, he was really off his game because, you know, this is something that really triggered something serious, and he just kind of didn't, you know, because any contestant knows you don't do the pre-made stuff. That's how you get thrown off the show, unless it was a Tanya in the quick fire where she had the pre-made dough for the 30-minute thing for her mushroom tart. But yeah, I was wondering if that was a fuck you for the alcohol.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a chef. I didn't come here to play with beer and soda water. Like, anyway, that's just now I'm just throwing conspiracy theories.
You know, now when brother got sent home, there was a little bit of moment on the show, Kevin, where Chris said, "Hey, you earned." No, it was brother. Yeah. Brother told Chris, "Hey, you earned the immunity. Don't worry about anything. You earn that immunity for this round. And then brother gets voted off. And I felt like if you saw Chris's face after brother got voted off, it looked like someone shot his dog. I mean, maybe it was the whole recovering alcoholic combined with the fact that brother got voted off after he beat brother to get that immunity. But it was sad. It was sad to see. And brother was such a big part of that show. And I think in terms of his charisma, he's generally a big guy, and there's a big guy theme in this season. But Chris just looked, it was a rough week for Chris. I'm glad we talked to him last week because things were a little bit brighter for him, but this was a tough one for him.
Yeah, and he is sitting with, I mean, in your point system, he's got two high finishes, one win. So 3 out of 6 weeks he's been at the judges' table being showered with compliments. He's got two bottom three plus this week, which was no great shakes. I'm shocked he didn't. Well, I guess you don't bring anybody on the bottom three if they have immunity. But they didn't do that whole thing where you're lucky you have immunity, mister.
they could have, but maybe they did say that and it was edited out. But he's right up at the top.
There's a chef I'm conflicted about, which is Adrian. She's missing free throws, Tom. She's nailing her proteins. You see the presentation. She did for the elimination. She did a gorgeous piece of Arctic char, lightly smoked, I believe, asparagus, this lovely pumpernickel crumble, like exactly the accent you would want for a high German challenge. And there's a whole montage of moments in this very young season where she's clearly undersalting and underseasoning her food, which is the thing that just really, you can tell, pisses off Tom Colicchio. Oh, yeah.
It's a cardinal sin.
But it's a cardinal sin and very correctable. And so on one hand, she's basically missing free throws. And I wonder now that she's gotten the message, because generally speaking, in terms of nailing preparation and technical work, she's one of the three or four best technical chefs in the pool right now. So is it just a salt issue? Because she is essentially leaving money on the table. She's getting all the difficult things right and all the easy things wrong. And I still think she has a lot of talent, though. When I look at the grid, she's got four lows and two middles in the elimination challenge. And I don't know. I mean, she's won, I think, where is she? I'm doing my work here. She won the little people challenge, but I'm sure just very low on your standings list. I would assume she's last of nine.
She's still in the negative. Yeah. She's still in the negative. Yeah. She's not doing so good. She's actually the lowest scorer of the remaining contestants, but I do feel like you're right, is that she is a little bit of a buy low candidate because of the fact that there is a very correctable mistake that she's having every time. She's just under seasoning. And there was a really fascinating quote that she had that the chef that she worked under said that if it tastes good and seasoned to you, it's probably too salty for guests. And Tom just lost his shit.
Whoever told you that advice, just forget it. You have five players left. I have four players left. We're kind of at the midway. Basically, we're at the trade deadline. And I just wonder, Tom, I mean, I'm calling you. You're a GM. I'm a GM. And I'm making calls. Who's available on your roster?
Look, Joe Stash is not available on my roster.
What do you mean he's not available?
He's – All right. You have to absolutely blow me over with an offer. He is my, I'm not going to say Giannis. He's not my Giannis, but he might be my Porzingis.
All right. Well, let me ask you a question. If I put Fatima in play,
now we're talking. If you have Fatima,
I'm not ready to do it, but I want to start constructing some. Here's the question: Fatima or Joe? Who you got? Who you got?
Oh, I think it's Joe.
Yeah, so do I. So I'm a bad negotiator. I'd be a terrible GM, Tom.
About Joe. Joe has got a little Katsuji in him. And what I mean by that is that he has so many techniques and things that he wants to do. He has got a little bit of a problem with editing. But man, like this week, I think we've talked about it a few times with him where he uses the phrase, bite off more than I could chew. And he is so good that he can take huge bites. Right? Huge bites, and he pulls it off. So Joe, I still think, is just technically in terms of personality. I think he's got favorite written all over him. So I would not entice a straight up Joe to Fati deal.
Let me think. Who else?
All right, how about this? Joe and Adrian for Fatima and Flam.
No. And I like Adrian, and I think she's a better chef than her score.
Oh,
I think,
man.
I like her. I just – now, by the way, if when we trade, do you get the points? Do you inherit the person's points or just from here on out?
No.
I think just from
here on out. From
here on out. Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. From here on out.
What do you want for – what do you want for Claudette?
We're going to bring her on after this?
Oh, because then you have to explain. Well, she won't know. We're recording. Claudette, you won't know that we're talking. Prior to a conversation about you, I'm inquiring about your trade status from Team Tom, Claudette. So just you're not going to hear this until later. So
I really like Claudette. I really think she's good. And there's just not a good trade. I mean.
And you're holding on to Bruce.
I'm holding on to Bruce.
I needed to call you 3 weeks ago.
You really did. You really did. I mean, I guess you could say he's a sell high candidate right now after winning last week's and then winning top three in this week's. But you know what? If I'm going to give up Bruce, it's either Fati or Chris are going to have to come back.
All right. Well, let me talk to you about Chris. And I love you, Chris, but no, everybody's tradable. Everybody's tradable. Except LeBron, right? I will trade you. All right, go ahead.
Would you do Claudette for Chris?
Ooh.
Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher turned podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order. Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, Noodle. Hey, boy. How you doing? And Noodle's just like,
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for your eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Throw in dinner.
Okay.
At
where?
Dinner at Mustache Joe's joint, which I haven't been to. In Beverly Center.
This
if
is
you throw
a, this
in
is,
a dinner check.
You just want a piece of Joe. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, I just think. I mean, I think I'm saying going forward. I think Claudette is cooking with a real confidence right now, and I think Chris is awesome. But I also. I think Claudette's trajectory is just really high. There's got to be a dinner check or a 2000 season 17, your fourth pick in the season 17 draft. One of those two things.
Well, this is 15. So you want to go right. Two seasons?
Well, I'm going to make it like, I mean, you know, you can replenish. That gives you a little more time to prepare. But your fourth choice, not the number four pick, but your fourth pick. In the season, we swap for your fourth pick for my next pick. So we do a pick swap. In other words, I get to flip for you. So if you're picking first, it would be my fifth. You know what I'm saying? Like I get your fourth pick for, and you go bump down.
Okay, I will do that. Forget the dinner. All right, I will do the pick swap for next year. So the terms are
season 16 or season 17? Which one?
16. Season 16. I'll do a season 16 pick swap of my fourth pick. My fourth selection goes to you, and then your fourth selection.
It depends because it'll be a snake draft, so it might be that your fourth is right before your fifth. In other words, if the person who picks first, they get their first pick, and then their second, third, and fourth and fifth together. So it could be like the next pick after your fifth. But if you're the other person, then it's, you know what I'm saying? Like it's just by virtue of our two-man draft, it's just weird. But yeah, basically when it's time for your fourth pick, I get it. And then you get my next pick.
Okay, the agreement is the deal is agreed in principle, Kevin.
And we'll work out the thing.
Yeah, it is agreed in principle. You can start tweeting it out, people. We need to send Mark Stein. We need to send... Brian Windhurst, a text that the deal is agreed in principle. Chris,
I think Scott, given where I work, I think it's best that I don't put out trade alert in my tweet. I think maybe the pack your knives tweet should be the appropriate feed for this. But yes, we have all right. Team Kevin has agreed in principle to a trade. We are sending Chef Chris Scott to Team Tom in exchange. For Chef Claudette Zepeda Wilkins and rights to a pick swap with Team Tom for his fourth pick for the season 16 draft in exchange for my following pick.
Yep.
Done. You want to make the trade call? Somebody call the league. Somebody call the league. Get the league on the phone.
I'll call the league.
Get the trade call.
You
can tweet that shit out now.
I feel this is hard because I feel like Claudette was one of my big draft picks and she was coming in strong recently. So I feel bad about this, but we should bring her on. I think it's time to bring on Claudette. If you have any stray thoughts here, maybe we bring it. Bring in Claudette.
Do you want now when she comes in? Do you want to talk about? Do you want this to be made public knowledge?
Oh man, we kind of have to.
We have to. All right, let's bring her in, Tom. Coming up really shortly. Claudette Zepeda Wilkins, chef from season 15. We are joined now by Claudette Cepeda-Wilkins, who is a contestant on season 15 and is kicking ass currently. She is set to open El Jardin in San Diego later this year, and we're very excited for that. She was the chef de cuisine at Bracero in San Diego in the Little Italy neighborhood, and that was a really big deal restaurant. Claudette, how are you?
Yep. Good. How are you guys?
We're having a great time doing this podcast this season.
Awesome. Good. Yeah. It's been really funny to, or fun to hear all the outtakes and what you guys, the perspective that everybody else has. So I've been enjoying all of the podcasts this season.
What are we most wrong about?
You know, you guys hit it on the nail on the head on the first one where you, or I think it was episode two where you kind of did the draft. I haven't listened to this week, so I haven't even watched the episode either. I have just had a really busy week, but you're pretty much spot on. Some things here and there. I think it was Kevin that said that I was going to be the asshole this season.
No, that was Tom. That was Tom me. Said you were going to be. I said you're going to be the truth teller.
Well, it's the same thing. Tom. It's the same thing, Kevin. And Claudette, being an asshole requires you to be the truth teller.
Yeah. I think, well, Kevin, you said I was going to be the what is it?
Greek chorus. I think you would kind of, yeah, the kind of the sound, the voice of the Greek chorus.
Yeah.
You are a trash talker though. That is undeniable. You were talking some shit on television about your fellow chefs. Is it in the spirit of competition? Is it in sort of a Draymond Green kind of way? Like what's going on?
Absolutely. I was, you know, I grew up with nothing but brothers. So trash talking is an art. You know, haters gonna hate all those, you know, hashtags or whatever. But I grew up with boys. I grew up with sports. I grew up with heckling each other. So for me, it's like, it's funny. Some people, I mean, I've gotten hate mail for people watching the show and like being really disappointed, quote unquote, on me. But actually, to me, it's still funny because we all have such a great relationship off the show, you know, and even off camera and everything. So it's a show. It's a reality show. Like if we
it's
were
a game.
All
like it's a competition.
Super...
Like there are winners and there are losers.
How boring would it be if everyone was super PC and said, oh my God, everyone, I hope everyone wins. Everyone gets a trophy. No, that's not the real world.
I want to talk about regional cuisine in Mexico really quick. Because, I mean, one of the things that I learned just kind of living in Southern California for 20 years now is, like, saying Mexican food is about as precise as saying American food. I mean, I don't know that there's a country where regional cooking is more distinct from, like, province to province than Mexico. Like, Guadalajara, like, Jaliscan food is completely different from Yucatan food. Like, the fact that we would just consider them under one umbrella is kind of ridiculous. There's also a Jaliscan place I love here, and actually it's in Bell, California, called La Casita Mexicana. That I love with a couple of chefs, but Jaliscan food is decidedly different than what most people in our country know as quote Mexican food, right?
Yeah, I mean, the regions really kind of are dictated by the terroir of that area. So Mexico, you have kind of the best of both worlds. You have inland, you have coastal areas, but it ends up being the regionality gets determined not only by the environment and the what can grow and all that stuff, but really who landed there. And that really changes the day-to-day, like, food on the table. In the Yucatan, you had slave trade ships, so you had a lot of, like, Caribbean, African spices coming through. And then you have, you know, the Mayans and the Aztecs. And so in Guadalajara, the reign of the Aztecs was below Guadalajara. So the indigenous tribes of Jalisco and Nayarit are the Huicholes. So they have their magic, but, you know, it's known, but not known for their cuisine. The Huicholes are known for their art, but you have some amazing magic that happens in Jalisco with food and the cheese and the dairy is, you know, unparalleled. And yeah, I mean, it's hard to put Mexico in one giant basket because there's even in what if you go to Guadalajara, you go to Jalisco and you go to different parts of Jalisco, you're already looking at three different recipes performed differently because of what they have near them. The best thing about cooking regional food is like the best approach to you cook what you have. If you don't have it, I guess you're not putting it in the dish. And so it really goes down to making work with what you have.
Which is very Top Chef-y, right? Like, that's basically the show.
Yeah, yeah. When we're giving the parameters where we can use everything, yeah. You know, the hard thing for elimination challenges is you can't use the pantry, so you only have to use what you purchase. That's when it gets interesting because not everything's available in grocery stores.
There's an eater story, eater.com story right now. What could a matriarchal restaurant look like? San Diego chef Claudette Cepeda Wilkins says her new modern Mexican restaurant, El Jardin, will be a project of women. How did your upbringing, growing up with a family full of brothers, how did that influence your style of cooking? What did you want to become in the chef world?
You know, I never sought out for the celebritydom of cooking. It's the one thing that I've tried leaving. Trust me, you know, making $9 an hour with two kids staring at you wanting things is incredibly hard to live this life and have children and being alone when I was a single mom. But, you know, growing up, I wanted to be a lawyer. I was really good at arguing. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed fighting a lot. We can tell. I was drawn back to the kitchen, And that comes from going to, you know, spending the summers in Guadalajara. My aunt had a restaurant where I went everywhere with her. I went to the market. I stood on a stool and, you know, prepped the little accoutrements that go in the pozole. And I was always drawn to the kitchen. It was a sense of gratitude to have to feed people. And I could see people's like smiles on their face. And that feeling, there's like nothing like it. You can't replicate the satisfaction you get when people eat your food and just kind of like hum a little bit, maybe close their eyes. That is so gratifying. And once I got a taste of that, I knew that I was a lifer. This was going to be the career that I was just going to do and try to make it work as much as possible. But being raised with brothers, you know, my brothers always joked that I'm the hardest one of all the boys. And, you know, it does kind of make you grow a little bit of thicker skin, you know, because we were always roughhousing. I was always, you know, I remember kicking kids and boys on my sixth grade notebook. Like it said, you're the best fighter in elementary school. Like I was the biggest tomboy, but it helped me in the kitchen because I didn't see myself as a female walking into a kitchen. I just saw myself as a cook. So I was never like okay with being, you know, dismissed or passed on. Like I was always asserted myself and put myself in that position of, listen, I can do this too. And, you know, always pushing my interest. And I started in pastries and I went to butchering and then I went to savory and I've never stopped me. And a lot of that is the women that have always like raised me. I've had really strong, independent women that helped me get through life.
Hey, who are you closest to on the show? During the shoot?
During the shoot?
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know if I'm close to anyone in the house. The only one that I found a connection with was Laura, and that was when I left. So when I left on the second episode, you know, we go to a house or, you know, a separate living situation, and Laura and I, she was the only other mom. She was the one that I could connect with, a little bit older. In the house, I never felt there, if that makes sense, which had a lot to do with why I mentally it was really hard. You know, it was hard to, when you don't have that connection, and I had the worst part of it was I had preconceived ideas of what it was going to be like because of Top Chef Mexico.
And yeah, I was going to ask you about
crazy
that.
Type. Yeah, I mean, it's just different. You know, when you're around people that all grew up the same, we all have the same jokes, we all understand each other. During filming, it was Rogelio, and then when he left, and then outside, it was Rogelio and Laura. So after they left, it was just, I just kind of kept to myself. Fati, I got along great with Fati, but, you know, it is what it is.
What
I
is
knew
different?
That it wasn't going to be... I'm sorry?
What is different with Top Chef Mexico and Top... Is it just the cultural differences between, you know, you're going to Top Chef, you know, the original, where it's just people from all different backgrounds, areas, different cuisine, but is it just culturally you just didn't hit it off with the people like you did at Top Chef Mexico?
Yeah. You know, and it was at first, it's like, oh, maybe it's me. Maybe they don't like me. And then you kind of revert to being that like insecure person. At least for me, it's like, I don't know if it's me, like maybe it's me. And I don't know. It just started messing with my head a little bit, but I try to get out of it. I don't drink very much, so that I don't have that commonality with a lot of, you know, industry people. I don't drink because I don't drink at home. I've tried to never bring alcohol in my house with my kids. So it's just a different lifestyle, you know, and it was culturally, when you go to Mexico, it's, you know, I had all my, like, their brothers and sisters, you know? Mm.
So what are your hacks on the show? In other words, I think there are things that, there are all these great debates about the show. We have them here, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, when do you bring out a dish that you wouldn't for a 200 person German, high German thing versus, hey, I've got this in my back pocket. How much risk do you take with each challenge? The truth of the matter is, as we all know, as much as you want to cook your food, the task is not to be the worst dish. It's like all you have to, you don't have to outrun the bear. You just have to outrun the slowest person from the bear. What are some of your hacks?
I'm the least successful of doing that as far as having a preconceived plan. I feel like whenever I plan something, because I'm such a control freak, I plan it to the last detail. And Top Chef is the worst place in, like, history of everything that you can pre-plan something. Because when you think you have an edge on them, guess what? They're going to flip it around and you have no idea.
So I would basically be out as like the super planner. I would just be out the first week. I would just be so screwed.
Yeah.
Okay.
A perfect example on episode 2, where we all thought we were going to do vegetables and animals, and boom, cheese. Like, we didn't even think of that realm, you know? So just, it really, as soon as you start having a preconceived idea is when the whole fucking thing falls apart. Mm-hmm. I had a preconceived idea of Whole Foods, but every Whole Foods is set up by the region, like where they're at. So what my Whole Foods here in San Diego has, Colorado Whole Foods doesn't have. You know, so it's like all of those things, you just can't plan for them. The only thing I can say is throughout my Top Chef U.S., career, sort of through LCK and everything, it was always just, you know what, just cook my food, like cook my flavors. And it was the elimination challenges where that got tricky, but I just had to like improvise. And there was like a level of improvisation that's like basic. And then there was that like one up. I had to always level up because the only thing that were available for my particular cooking style was raw ingredients. I didn't have anything dry. So it's definitely tricky.
So take us behind the scenes on Last Chance Kitchen. Are you, so you're living in a separate house with the other contestants that are in Last Chance Kitchen. It always make me feel kind of a bummer to see like Laura and Rogelio in the Last Chance Kitchen, just kind of sitting on the side. So what do you do when you're eliminated? I know you're continuing to compete in Last Chance Kitchen. That's got to be an awkward dynamic, right? They're kind of sitting on the sidelines while you're competing, and they got to do that for weeks. Like, is it taped different times? The real show? Like, can you walk us through that?
The good thing is we have each other in the, you know, the Plan B living quarters. We have each other. So Laura and I really leaned on each other a lot mm-hmm. for like emotional support. And her son was, you know, back in Alaska. I had my husband here in San Diego with the kids, and they're fine. They had already kind of gotten used to the Top Chef Mexico departure. I was gone for 3 months for that. So, you know, my family was okay, but I was there for moral support, and we cooked. Like, we were living in, like sweets sort of with hot plates, and me and Laura would make huge meals and we would feed everyone. And that was kind of like our therapy. So it ends up being, time flies, believe it or not, but it does, you do get a little restless because you don't have your cell phone. You don't have, you know, all of the things that you go in not having, you still don't have when you're out. So it gets tricky. You have to learn how to kind of be your own therapist and lean on each other. The filming part, you know, we're all friends. So at the end of the day, you're still cheering your friends on. So it's not like it messes with you a little bit. I'm sure they felt, you know, and I think Rogelio, you know, we've had conversations where he sees the film back. And he's like, damn, I look pissed. But I think that he's such a talented chef and he's got way more to show. And I don't think that people should, like, Top Chef doesn't make you a good or bad cook. You know, you can, it's just the extreme situations that you get put in that, oh, maybe it wasn't your day, but it doesn't define us as chefs. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You kind of found yourself. I mean, there was a, I mean, in fact, you kind of, Last Chance Kitchen is kind of where you went to, like.
Yeah, she was in the Instagram, just like, watch Last Chance Kitchen. And she
right,
was,
no, but I mean, you yeah. became, a, yeah, exactly. You became a much more confident contestant. I want to say chef. You're probably perfectly confident in your own kitchen. But like, in terms of the context of the show and the weird stuff you have to do as a chef, I mean, you got a win or two under your belt in Last Chance Kitchen, man. You were gone. Like, you were, you've got this, essentially. And you're
yeah,
back
I mean, you know what? Before I went back into Last Chance Kitchen, I was trying to, because I was so negative at the fact that I didn't have like my chilies and my ingredients, and you know, I didn't have not even masa meal, which is not something that I cook with. I nixtamalize my own corn, but it's like, at least give me something. And the pantry had it, so that was my time to. I made a list of like, I think brother did a picture of the kitchen layout on like how to make his time most efficient. So I did that, but all the ingredients in the pantry before I went back. So I knew exactly, because I had, you know, I had already gone there a couple of times. I knew exactly where everything was. I knew what was available. And then I started kind of doing a little like Venn diagram of like, okay, if I get this. So I had, that's when I started planning, because I knew what my ingredients, at least the pantry was going to be. And once I saw the ingredients wheel in every challenge, it was, they were just completely in my wheelhouse. They were not ingredients we had any other time. If I had tongue on a regular 4-hour challenge, I'd blow their freaking minds. But you had to make it work in Last Chance Kitchen, you know, but it wasn't available. Tongue's not available at the Whole Foods Market. So it was completely in my wheelhouse. So I was really excited to be able to show Tom more than anything, because I never want to go out, you know, not being me.
Yeah.
I love a good lingua.
Yes. Yeah, I was saying lingua is kind of, that's my go-to. Hey, I want to ask you about your dish this week, because you did for the German challenge, and it's like you kind of got your flavors, and you did cilantro, lemon, liverwurst, beef schnitzel, potato salad. Tell me about habanero ash, because Tom mentioned that you finished it with that. It's a really nice touch. Like, an intermediate home chef, like, is that, I mean, first of all, I got a habanero scare the hell out of me, because I was once cutting one and then rubbed my eye, like, just because I rub my eyes all the time. So that was like
eaten three of them whole in the past 2 weeks. I understand your pain.
Yeah, we've got to tell you about Tom's challenge.
I've seen it.
Awesome. So you're hereby challenged, by the way. I'm going to challenge you on behalf of Tom.
Yeah.
Well, funny tidbit. I just had ulcer surgery on 27th of December, so I can't have anything for another 3 weeks.
Can I, what is habanero ash? Is that something, it seems like they were so charmed by it, and I want to know what it is.
You can, I mean, anybody can do it. It's literally just forget them in the oven.
Yeah, you just torch the shit out of it, and then you
sprinkle it on. And then you take the ash, and then that's it. Okay, see, these are things I don't know. It seems exotic.
Yeah, you know, it almost mellows it out a little bit. It gives it that little bit like a charred, smoky quality. And it's spicy, but not at the level that habaneros are normally spicy. So they're a lot more approachable. And when you do an ash, obviously it's not like you're throwing a ton in there. You know, you just want it so it's that like underlying flavor of, you don't know what it is, but it's good. It adds something to it. It adds depth of flavor. And you can do it with any chilies. I usually do habaneros with green onions and garlic, and I burn all of that and then make an ash out of it. So
do you chop, is it the flesh, or do you cut it open, and do you put any oil on top?
I just do the flesh, and just no oil, nothing, just dry pan.
Wow.
Good to know. So I have to confess to you, so I'm not a fussy eater, Claudette. Like, I'll eat any organ meat, like, you know, awful. I'm not one of those, oh, that texture bothers me people. Like, there's no texture that can upset me. There's one thing in cooking, and use it all the time, that I just cannot like get with. And
Claudette, it's cilantro.
Yeah. And
Kevin's like, speaking for me right now. Kevin is speaking for me right now. So
are you also a cilantro phobe, Tom? Do I know this?
Yes.
And people are like, does it taste like soap? And I'm like, no. You know what it tastes like? It's like if you took a bundle of parsley and you stuck it up somebody's ass. And then you left it there for 3 days, and then they died.
No.
And then you left it another 2 days, and you took it out. Like it's like the kind of – there are things that we all like more than other things. Like, I'm not a huge fan of raw peppers, but like, I'll deal with them, and I understand their appeal. You know, there's certain flavors I don't like as much as others. But like, cilantro is one of those things that when I get any hint of it, It's like, I can't imagine another human being not finding this like any less like appealing or more than shit. Like, oh, we all man. Agree that like it's that bad. And it really hurts me because so many chefs like you, especially living in Southern California, like I love like regional Mexican cuisine, and it's everywhere. I love like so much Asian flavor, especially in, you know, Thailand, Vietnam. And I can't fucking tolerate it.
So how often do you get, hey, can
you eat it?
I'm sorry?
Like, do you eat it at all?
No, I mean, I avoid it like the plague. Like, I just ask a lot in restaurants, does it have it? I never ask for the substitute. Like, one of the things I always respect with you guys is I'm a fan of no substitutions in this institution. Like, I am a believer that you don't go in and tell the chef, well, can you do it this way? Like, you guys put so much thought and care and love and planning and thought into that dish. Like, I don't want to – I do need to know if it has it, because I'll just, like, not consider it. But I never ask, unless it's a garnish. Like there's this place I go for whole baked Vietnamese fish, and they garnish it all the top. They sprinkle a ton of it. And I'm just like, hey, just leave that off and it's no problem. But I would never ask you at El Jardin, oh, hey, just tell the chef I don't like cilantro. Now, if they ask, do you have allergies? I don't say it's an allergy, because I don't want to, it's not going to hurt. I'm not going to die. I will say, you know, I don't care for cilantro, but I don't want to impose on the kitchen. That's what I say.
Yeah. It would happen. It happens more than you think. It's really funny. At Berthero, we would get a lot of cilantro, onion, and garlic allergies. And I would just look at the server and like, we're going to kill them if they walk in here, because something has breathed on something that is related to the allium family or the cilantro family. So, you know, if it's a religious allergy, no. We can't serve them because I never know, you know, if somebody, it's cilantro, you're chopping cilantro, then chopping onions, and then you put it in, you're screwed, you're dead. But 9 times out of 10, it's just an aversion to it. And then as soon as you started saying, well, kind of everything has this, people then, you know, backtrack. Oh, well, okay, I can have it. Or if it's cooked.
Screw the onion and garlic, people. I think so. Hey, what's the most annoying request you get from serve? Like, when you're in the kitchen and a server, like, what just is like, oh, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, how are we going to deal with this? Like, do you have any of those that just annoy the hell out of you? Like, what, we know what annoys us about restaurants. What annoys restaurants about customers?
It's the people that don't have open minds, that want to create their own menu, you know, yes. And that's, I've learned to have a little bit more grace and not flash out on even the servers that come ask, you know, the idiotic questions. But I feel like diners, when they go to a restaurant, well, they know that they're going to a restaurant. You know, they should either pre-eat or, you know, let go a little. And it's the control eaters that, you know, want very specific meals and then want you to bend over backwards on it. And it's like, you know, all this work is already put into place, and a lot of our dishes are 2-3 day preps. They're not, we don't, you know, the thing about Mexican food, a lot of it is slow cooked, long processes. So when they want carnitas, but they don't want it in fat, well, then it's not carnitas. We just want a pork chop.
That's,
you know, it's like, I can't back it out. You know, once it's done, it's done. And then when it gets a little too much, and it's like, I've aged, I've gotten a little bit more graceful on it, but it's like, geez, stay fucking home. Like, we try to accommodate all diners, especially being in California. You know, all my menus have even vegan dishes that are approachable, but it's still the people that still look at the menu and can't find anything there, and they try to create their own. And then that gets a little bit like, well, then don't go to a chef-driven restaurant. Go to an Applebee's or go somewhere where the people can eat something out of a bag.
Hey, Tom, what's your weird one? Do you have any, like, when you, like, requests? You're pretty easy.
Yeah, I'm
asking Tom.
No, I'm pretty easy. I think cilantro is the only thing that I will not have. I'll just be like, hey, can you hold a cilantro? And what's really tough about cilantro is sometimes it's baked into the salsa, right? So, like, it's very hard to, like, at certain Mexican restaurants or what have you, the answer is usually like, yeah, we can't just undo that. And now I'm thinking Claudette hates me. Because a lot of the time, like, her dishes are probably baked in. Like, you can't just remove after the fact, post hoc, just get the cilantro. It's not just the garnish, right? So I think she just hates me.
No, and it's funny. A lot of the, so I've been researching it in all of the workups that I'm having. I've been reading like the historical history of Mexico in whole from the 15th century to today on food. And I have a one salsa on the menu that is like a pre-Hispanic salsa. So it doesn't have onions. It doesn't have cilantro. It only has the things that were in Mexico during the pre-Hispanic era. So, you know, there are things, if someone says, honestly, I just don't like it, I will bend over backwards to give them something that they'll like.
Oh.
It's when someone lies and says, I have an allergy, well, then I'm afraid to even do anything, you know. But if people are honest, like, it's so much easier to, you know, they just don't like it. Okay, I can live with that. As a grown up, I know that I have the things I don't like. If someone was just honest and said, I just can't eat it. Okay, perfect. I can work with that. I can work with honesty. So I'm, you know, Thomas Keller said it best. If someone comes into my restaurant and orders sweet potato fries, it's my job to get them sweet potato fries. You want cornflakes? I'll run to the store and get you cornflakes. I'm still going to charge you $200, but I'll give you cornflakes. You know, so I can accommodate rational adults. It's the people that try to get around by lying about allergies, which is, I think it's so irresponsible. It's like saying your cute dog is your service dog. Like, it really, you know, at least lessens the ability for other people to actually bring service dogs in me to believe them.
So,
you sort of see the service otters, and then there's some really like crazy things, and yeah.
Yeah. You saw my post the other day of like, I'm sorry, you can't bring food in here. It's like, this is my service burrito. Yeah. Okay.
Well, Claudette, you just gave some really good life advice. Just be honest with people. So I'm going to be honest with you right now. just gotta say it. I just traded you off my fantasy team.
Yeah, I just traded for you, Claudette. You got traded. It cost me Chris Scott, but I also got a swap pick as well.
Claudette, I'm sorry. It's not an indictment on you and the hard work you've done. In fact, I think the qualities that I like about you, I just worry that you're too good at your job. You're too good at being a truthful person and honesty that I was like, you know what? I want her in my kitchen. I just don't know if she's perfect Top Chef material. I will go to her kitchen every day of next week. But I made a move with Kevin, and you just so happened to be on the show today. So there you have it. I'm sorry.
You're now on team problem. Kevin. You have been traded. All right.
Three favorite tacos in San Diego area. Tacos El Gordo does a great street style taco. That's one of my favorite. Alabada's go to for sure.
What neighborhood?
Tacos El Gordo. They have several different locations. They're Chula Vista. They have two locations. They have one a little bit northern. It's South Bay, but not. I don't think they've actually branched out further north than South Bay. My second favorite taco is Ceviche House, the mean fish taco. My friend Juan Carlos does a really good job of just working the best sustainable fish he can get in San Diego. I was just with him at the fish market this morning.
So what's the name? Wait, give us the name and location again. General
Ceviche location. House in Old Town in San Diego.
All right, good deal.
Yeah, really, really good. I think my third favorite taco, one, its location. Barrio Logan, to me, is one of my favorite spots in San Diego because it's really held up its integrity of the Chicano movement and Mexican families and that, like, culture of, like, brotherhood. I particularly like their Barrio Taco. It's at Salud in Barrio Logan.
All right, Salud's?
Salud, yeah.
All right. And that's like near the naval base, basically.
Yeah, it's right underneath the Coronado Bridge.
Yeah. Okay. Because good to know. Because these are, I'm in San Diego, not frequently, but it's just a great visit. And I'm always looking for a good seafood taco in San Diego, just because.
Well, you'll come to San Diego to see me once I open, right?
Oh, you bet. Oh, I mean, there will be an easy El Jardin jaunt down there. That is great. I really enjoy San Diego, and so that will be excellent. Yeah, you're now a member of Team Kevin. I'm very excited about this.
Awesome.
This has been a good development today. Tom, anything else?
Just in a puddle of tears right now. I feel so bad for trading Claudette. I'm so sorry.
Whatever, Tom. Whatever. I got to change my hashtag now. Now I'm Team Kevin and Team Tom Colicchio.
Well, you know what? You know what? I feel like, did you learn something about Tom Colicchio's palate that really made you excel in Last Chance Kitchen? Did you just have to pour salt on everything?
No, you know, Mexican food notoriously is good on it, plenty of acid and salt. But he really dug the fact that I didn't hold back on the spiciness. I was never afraid of that one, you know, of that dish being too spicy. Like my lengua taco, it was spicy. It had, you know, serranos in there. And he was just, I remember he took a bite and I don't know if they passed it on camera, but he just goes, wow, that's really spicy.
Yeah, he did.
As chili develops, you know, it changes a little bit in your palate. And he was like, it's really good. You know, it sticks around. So it was always something. It's one of those flavors that he can have three other dishes and he'll still kind of have in the back of his palate my dish, which is kind of with my end game, really.
And Padma's got really high tolerance for spice.
Padma, yes, she does.
Yeah, because, I mean, she'll often complain about a lack of it. But
right.
Do you know how to game the judging in so far? It's obviously you can go out and cook great food, but do you know, are there things you know you have to do for the judges?
Yes and no. Some challenges call for it. Other challenges call for you just doing you and hoping they get it. So that's the gamble. That's part of the game, you know. Hopefully it's a toss-up every day, every challenge. It's completely up in the air who's going to stay and who's going to go. And it's, you know, sometimes you wake up in a shitty mood and it affects the way you play. So it really, it's everyone's game. Like, I love seeing how things shift and how points go up and down and the shit talking that goes around. But it's really, I mean, there's some really strong chefs and they're amazing at what they do. And they have their voice, and the ones that don't have their voice get it through Top Chef. So the evolving of each person is also beautiful to see. But overall, every fucking challenge is the new hurdle to go through. But you do kind of learn on what they like. I still don't know what Gail really likes. I didn't have very many, you know, through the beginning of the season. So as the season got forward, and then I was like, okay, I kind of get it. Okay, yes, he likes this. But because we have different judges that come in and out, was like, okay, I want to keep cooking for him. I want to keep cooking for her. I had Padma and Tom completely locked from the beginning. And then LCK just solidified Tom for me. But it's cool to get to know the judges more.
Nice.
We're going to discuss Last Chance Kitchen next week. But Claudette, did you see what happened on this episode with Two and Brother?
Yeah, we have our little sidebar conversation on it. It's reality TV.
Oh, wait. So you're saying the editing showed a lot more beef than the actual beef between Two and Brother?
Yes, of course. Okay. We love each other.
Okay. All right. Kevin. Kevin hasn't seen it yet.
All right. And I haven't seen it yet. And yes, it is one thing to know, having worked on a reality show as a writer, like it is. Yeah, the job is to amplify even the slightest conflict into
right.
a full scale war. Like that's what happens. That's, you know, so they get the things when they cut to somebody making a look while the judges are talking. It's often actually that look might have been made like 10 minutes ago
or about something completely 10 days ago. Yeah, you never know.
Claudette, I'm very excited to have you on the team. And I'm thrilled you joined us today. This is fun and I cannot wait to get down. What do you think? What are you targeting for the open?
We're looking for early spring, March, crossing my fingers. But the project's now, you know, we're in a 100-year-old building that's historic. So when we went to go dig for plumbing, we found out that half of our kitchen was sitting on top of a old sidewalk. So it's had its hurdles, and there's no plans for the actual understructure of the building or the top structure of the building. So we're pushed now to early spring. But I think all systems are going, we'll hit that target.
You might see me. My boyfriend covers Comic-Con every year for a major U.S.
Cool.
newspaper. And so yeah. I've been talking about my tagging along, and this might have to be the year so that we can do dinner.
I'm afraid to go.
Yeah, I'll even make you a special menu, no cilantro for you.
Yeah, but I don't want to be. All right, for me, yes, okay. I won't say no, but I also feel guilty making you say yes.
I'll just highlight the things that you can eat.
Yeah, but you know, I sit down at that table, there's going to be tons of cilantro in there.
Just a bouquet of it.
Yeah.
It's going to be the centerpiece in that table.
And then, like, I'm going to wash my hands. The soap is just going to be cilantro soap and, like, just everything. Like, the there's a candle on my table that is just burning cilantro.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm not that hateful. Come on, guys.
Okay.
It's just a show. It's how it's edited. I'm not that mean.
No, I said you were a truth teller. I didn't even think you were an asshole. I thought you were a truth teller. That was my
opinion. Oh, that was fun. Thank you, Claudette.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, we'll have to. I wish we had like another 6 years of this show because I'd love to have her back on. So thank you so much. And thank you for the 4 points you gave me this season. Thank you so much for those.
No problem. You guys should have given points for Last Chance Kitchen. I kept telling you.
You know what? It was an oversight by ours. We're going to do it for next season. We're going to have Last Chance Kitchen points.
You have to. I mean, the game completely changes.
Yeah. You okay with that, Kevin?
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I've deferred all point system final decisions to you.
Oh, by the way, you're right now, as it stands, Claudette, you can hear this too. Team Kevin, you are joining a winning team. Team Kevin has 108 points, and my team has 77. So Kevin is in the lead. And right now, Claudette, we don't feel like there's a heavy favorite in this competition. The point system that we developed reflects that there really isn't anyone who is head and shoulders above the rest. So we're really excited for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I think so far we've broken every like stereotype of Top Chef previous cast, right?
Yeah, tell Tyler Anderson and me. Yeah. Yeah, whoever wins the first elimination challenge is destined to be the winner and the next president of the United States. And sure enough, like that was totally false. So,
oh God,
yeah.
I can't imagine Tyler as the president.
Good call. Well, Claudette, thank you so much. And we'll have you on at some point. I would love to have just like a big group Top Chef contestant podcast. That'd be a lot of fun.
That would be fun.
That would be really cool. You'd have to make it like a 2-hour special. We got a lot of things to say.
Well, thanks for coming on and saying them. And we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
This is Pack Your Knives.